without me even watching your video about rehab fraud, I'm going to teach you some things about the rehab business that many people will even go through recovery from drugs or alcohol and spend years in it and never learn these things. I want to teach you something about Alcoholics Anonymous. If you go to an AA meeting and you just walk in and you say, "Hi, my name is Jason. I've been drinking and I think I need to quit." That's all you need to say. They are going to surround you. They are going to love bomb you. And they're going to take you into the meeting. And they are going to start quoting the big book. And they are going to tell you things that are absolutely not true. Like when they start the AA meeting, do you know what they do? They read a piece of paper called a preamble. And in this preamble, it says that the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. That is absolutely a lie. If the only requirement for membership in AA is a desire to stop drinking, then they wouldn't force the big book on people, but they do. You see, I had a sponsor in AA back in the early 90s, back when I had a drinking problem. And I recently told him that I'd had people actually bullying me over this stupid big book. And he said, "Edward, that's what they did to me back around early 1970s. He said they told me to get in the book or hit the road. Okay, so this is what they do. First, they bring you in and they tell you the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. And they're going to casually come up and they're going to tell you, "You want to get in the book?" That's what they're going to tell you. That's what they're going to ask you. And most people are going to say, "Okay." Right? And they're going to sit down and at least read the book. They're going to give you a reading assignment to read basically the first half of the book, but it's really expected that you read the entire thing cover to cover. I'm bored with the big book, so I didn't do it. If you do not fall in love with this book, they will bully you out of the room, which means that when they tell you at the beginning of every meeting that the only requirement is a desire to stop drinking, it's bullshit. Okay? They told my sponsor that from the early 90s, he now has 50 years of continuous sobriety. Now, do you know what? I don't believe that he was ever an alcoholic. An alcoholic, I mean, if you've ever known a real alcoholic, I mean, there are alcoholics on different levels. There are people who, you know, before they go to work in the morning, they stop off at the store and get a couple of tall boy beers, you know, can't get the day started without those two beers, right? And then at lunch, they'll have one or two or three, and at night, they're shit-faced. Okay, and then you got alcoholics like one of my friends over here across town. This boy will suck down a half gallon of vodka like it's Gatorade. Now, those are real alcoholics. Now, let me tell you what AA does. AA is going to tell you about God. They're going to tell you, "Oh, you got to pray. You can pray to a doorknob or an ashtray. Or you can pray to the garbage dumpster." And I'm like, what kind of shit is that? Okay. They're real big on believing in this God of your own understanding. But then they will straight to your face tell you that AA is not a religion. Well, come on, it really is. We go to this place regularly to talk about God. They actually switch the story from sobriety to God. I mean, they still talk about getting their little 30-day chip, their 60-day chip, their 90-day chip. But they're really fanatical about this God thing, and it's a generic God. I've seen people in AA. I saw a girl, and she told me, she said, I pray to my laptop. She literally told me that her higher power, her God, is her laptop. And I looked at her and I said, well, you better get the antivirus checked. You wouldn't want your God to get a virus. many people in AA are not alcoholics. I'm going to touch on that in a minute. But anyway, they talk about God a lot. If you look at the 12 steps, the word God is peppered all through it. Okay? But you know what? There's a contradiction. Their 12 and 12 book plainly says that AA does not demand belief. But I want to tell you something. If you come into AA and you say, I do not believe in God, I do not want God, they will bully you out of the fucking room. They will shun you. They will ignore you. But then they'll turn around and tell you, AA is not a religion. Now, how can that be? We're all focused on God, but we're not a religion. I'm going to tell you why I think that they love the religious aspect of finding God, but then they say straight up, we are not a religion. And I'll tell you why. Because the majority of these for-profit treatment centers, the foundation of their treatment program is the AA Big Book. Okay? So if AA was classified as a religion, then these treatment centers would have to submit a bill to the insurance companies for the rendering of religious services. Oh no, that insurance claim is going to get denied. Okay, insurance companies do not pay for indoctrination of a religious program. Insurance companies will pay for the treatment of alcoholism or addictions, but will not pay for religion. If they did that, they would be opening the door for every church in the world that sits down for 30 minutes to submit a bill to an insurance company for $5,000. Okay? I'm going to tell you something. These treatment centers get a shit ton of money for keeping you behind locked doors and taking your blood pressure twice a day. You know, that's literally what they do. I mean, they have the most bullshit program. It's like being locked in a motel room for 30 days. And they get astronomical amounts of money for it. $1,000, $2,000 a day per head. And basically, they take your blood pressure a couple times a day. They get you into AA meetings inside the facility. They, you know, arts and crafts class, go out and play with the horses in the pasture. Just complete bullshit. Okay. So anyway, AA is a hypocrite. It tells you there's only one requirement for membership, but then when you, come in and sit down and say, I have a desire to stop drinking, they'll say, well, you got to get in the book or you got to hit the road. That's what they told my original sponsor back in early 1970s when he came in. This was right after Bill Wilson passed away. I think he passed away around 1970, somewhere in there. And you know what happened when Bill Wilson passed away is some of the more enthusiastic members, they kept the preamble that they read in the meetings, which says the only requirement is a desire to stop drinking. And they just went ahead and said, we need to tighten up this ship a little bit. And those guys that are not in the book, they gotta go. And they started implementing a system whereby if you were not in the book, working with a sponsor, if you didn't have a sponsor, you would get ignored. You would get put on ignore status, kind of like I am at Set It. Typically, when someone comes to a place like an AA meeting and everyone just walks by you and ignores you, and I promise you, this is literally what they do, and it is entirely over the book. I mean, I studied AA back in California about 15 years ago. I took 10 months out of my life, and I did nothing but go to 3 meetings a day for 300 days. I went to a 6 p.m. meeting, an 8 p.m. meeting, a 10 p.m. meeting. I was on site for 6 hours a day from 6 p.m. until midnight for literally 300 days or approximately 10 months. I went to 900 meetings, 3 a day times 300 days is 900 meetings. I was on site 6 hours a day times 300 days. I was on site 1,800 hours. And you know what? I was there about a week, and they had been trying to nudge me into reading the book with various people. And I said, you know what? I just want to sit and listen. And so this guy comes up to me and he says, Edward, you want a book? And I said, no, not really. I just want to sit and listen. I want to prepare to work the steps. I want to observe. I want to learn about the 12 steps. And then I will work the 12 steps, which I did. And he looks at me and he says, what do you mean? You just want to sit in there with no book? I said, pretty much. And he said, you can't do that. Maybe you need to leave. Maybe you're not one of us. And he pointed to the exit door and he was fucking serious. I want to tell you what else. They got so fucking nasty with me because I was not in the book. I could be sitting at the picnic table outside and nobody would make eye contact with me. There could be 8 or 10 people sitting at this table and everybody's talking to everybody, but they refused to make eye contact with me, and it was entirely about my refusal to get busy studying this big book. It got so real that one time I showed up about 5:30. I was there about a half hour before the group started. And this young man, I guess about 35 or 40, walks up to the table, just him and me on the property. And he looks at me and he says, man, you're not even in the book. You're a fucking bitch. I said, is it really like that? And he said, yeah, you're not in the book. You're a fucking bitch. I said, well, thank you for sharing that with me. I had another guy, this big white boy. I mean, he was a gangster capable white boy. He was a big bull white boy. And just him and me, we got to the group early, about 5:30. And he's walking around eating sunflower seeds, throwing the seeds at me after he eats the seeds. Just chucking them at me. Bam! You're not even in the book. Bam! You're not even in the book. Bam! And so I looked at him and I said, would you please stop throwing seeds at me? And eventually someone else showed up and he had to stop. One day, I'm going to tell you how fucked up they got to me because I just wanted to listen. And, you know, I'm a big believer in preparation, so I didn't mind. You know, instead of just walking in and picking the first dumb shit to lead me through that book, I said, I want to sit and listen. And I want to soak it up, and I want to kind of understand what the fuck is going on here. One day I was sitting at the picnic table. On the weekends, they had extra meetings. They had meetings scattered through the day. And I would show up about 9 or 10 o'clock in the morning and go to meetings all day. Okay? And I probably, I used to regularly stop at a Jack in the Box and have their, what was it, 2 or 3 tacos for a dollar? I can't remember. I would have a couple orders of those and, you know, maybe a little croissant thing and coffee. And then I would shoot over for my AA meeting on the weekend. And now keep in mind, I had squashed my drinking problem years ago. I do not have a drinking problem today, period. But I stopped by this club, and once I arrived there, I hadn't left the club. I hadn't eaten anything except maybe a cookie or something that was at the club. And, About 2 or 3 o'clock in the afternoon, I'm sitting at the picnic table out in the patio. And guess what? I start to notice my head is buzzing. And I start looking at my hands and I'm like, wow, I'm high. I'm high on meth. Those motherfuckers, they put meth in my coffee because they were angry that I'm not in the book. Okay? Just telling you the mentality of these people, they are so Nazi about this fucking book. And I'm really glad I spent these 10 months going through this because I really, you know what, imagine going to this program for 20 or 30 years and not realizing that if you had just wanted to sit down and listen, they would have thrown you out. I'm gonna tell you one thing that happened. One time I walked in, oh, I guess about 5:45 before the club had officially opened and started the first 6 o'clock meeting. And one of the most senior guys at the club was sitting there in the leader's seat, and there were like 3 or 4 cute 30-year-old girls sitting beside him. And he looks at me, and you know what he says? He says, Edward, if you would just work the steps. And he points at the girls and he says, look what you could have. And I said, all 4 of them? Giddy up. He was telling me that if I would just work the 12 steps, that basically he, as a senior member of the group, would give the girls a green light to fuck me. You understand? That's how real it is. Okay, I'll tell you what I met in that group in California. There was this one young man, and he was pushing 40, and he was too uppity to ever even say hello to me, but I was used to this because everyone gave me a cold shoulder because I wasn't in the book. This guy finally spoke in one of the meetings, and because I attended every meeting at this group, basically, I missed a couple here and there, but not many. He spoke in the meeting, and his story was that he came to AA on a court order when he was 16 years old. He had gotten caught selling magic mushrooms to an undercover police officer, which has nothing to do with alcoholism. I mean, he was probably dinging around with magic mushrooms. I took them a couple times. I didn't get an effect from it. But I must have took the wrong ones, too, because some people say they really like them. But he came to AA on this court card. Basically, they pawned him off. They didn't want to arrest him and put him in jail for these stupid mushrooms. So they looked at the kid, 16 years old, and they gave him a choice. They said, you can go to jail, or you can go to AA. Come on, they're getting rid of him. Of course he's going to choose AA. But he comes to AA, and guess what? He has never tasted alcohol in his entire life. He's never, ever tasted alcohol, yet he came to AA, and he got the big book and became convinced that he is an alcoholic. Okay? He spoke in the meeting. One time I heard him speak, and he said, I've never even tasted alcohol, and I can read the big book and figure out that I'm an alcoholic. Why can't everybody do this? Right? There are literally people walking around AA, such extreme cases that they've never tasted alcohol, but they firmly believe that they're alcoholics, and they became convinced of this because they read the big book. The big book, and I'm going to tell you something, if you had any kind of a drinking history and you got a driving intoxicated charge and came to AA on a court order, that doesn't mean you're alcoholic. It just means you drank in excess, maybe at a Christmas party or New Year's party, maybe at a birthday party, maybe at a backyard barbecue, and you got behind the wheel and got a driving intoxicated. You came to AA, got in the big book at their request, and you became convinced that you're an alcoholic. Isn't that something? So my original sponsor from the early 90s, who was more of a friend than a sponsor, because my life was literally a clusterfuck in the early 90s. In the early 90s, I was an active drunk. I was a full-time criminal, and I literally had every form of corruption wrapped around my life like you can't imagine. But I asked him about a year ago, I said, you know, I've had some people pressuring me about that big book. And he said, well, Edward, that's what they told me when I came in 50 years ago. They told me to get in the book or hit the road. Well, doesn't that contradict the preamble, which says that the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking? Doesn't it? You know, I told you about the guy who had never tasted alcohol, but he's been running around in AA for like 20 plus years. I dated a girl in AA back when I knew my first sponsor, and she was super hot. God, I was 26 and she was 16. She was smoking gorgeous. She was silky sweet from head to toe. She was 6 foot tall. She was a model. She was a rich girl's rich girl. God, she was loaded. She didn't squander her money. She was tight with her money. And that's how a lot of rich people are. They don't squander it. But she was a rich girl. And she was in AA because her father had had a drinking problem. And he came to AA, and she also had never tasted alcohol, but she believed she was an alcoholic because she thought she had the alcoholic gene, like genetics gene. And I'm like, what the f-? I didn't realize it back then. I just heard it and just listened to what she said, but what the fuck does a 16-year-old know about alcoholic genes? Let me think, what else can I tell you? I've seen them trying to indoctrinate people that absolutely are not alcoholics. Like, I was at this club over here in Southwest Houston, and this young man came in and dressed real sharp. He'd just gotten out of prison, but he's dressed like, oh my God, he was dressed nice. I mean, he had on nice pressed slacks, nice shoes, nice socks, nice shirt. The man was clean. He had a spotless haircut. He had on an ankle monitor. Apparently he did something to get on GPS monitoring. And it was just him and me at the club. And so I introduced myself to him, showed him around the club, and then I looked at him and I said, if you don't mind me asking, are you an alcoholic? And, you know, because you don't want to assume. I don't know what he's going to say when I ask him that question. You know what he told me? He said, hey, bro, I don't even like the taste of alcohol. I said, okay, I get it. He's not an alcoholic. He's here on a court card, a court order, and he's not an alcoholic. If somebody looks at me and says, I don't even like the taste of alcohol. He's probably not an alcoholic, okay? Clean dressed, no sign of any intoxication. I'm like, okay, I get it. And then he looks at me and he's very honest and he says, you know what, when, I'll tell you something else. He said, when I get off of these court papers and I get this GPS monitor off my ankle, I am smoking some green bud. And I said, okay, I get that too. But do you know, about 30 minutes later, there was a group of something like 8 or 10 people surrounding him at the picnic table out on the patio. And they were forcing an AA Big Book into his hands. And they were, he was looking at him. And I was sitting at the other picnic table listening to this. He was telling them, I don't even like the taste of alcohol, lady. I don't really need that book. And she told him, she said, just take it home and read it. It might help you. I'm going to tell you something. There's a lot of people in AA not alcoholics. A lot of people. You know what a sign, you know what a clue is? Like my sponsor who has 50 years. You know what I asked him after he told me about a year ago that they told him to get in the book or hit the road? I asked him, and this is a good question to ask somebody about alcohol problem. I asked him, I said, tell me something. I said, what was it like for you when you were drinking? And he said, just like this. He said, oh, Edward, I can still remember that whiskey going down my throat. Yeah. Well, he's not an alcoholic. You know why? You know how I know that? I'll tell you what, you ask Muskrat if whiskey going down his throat is a bad memory. No. Muskrat's an alcoholic. Muskrat's a nice guy. But if you ask him, what's it like for you when you're drinking, he's not going to say, oh, that whiskey going down my throat, yuck. Right? To an alcoholic, whiskey tastes like beautiful music, okay? It doesn't bring up bad memories. But this man came into AA, probably having drank a few times, maybe got a driving intoxicated charge, and he came in and they told him to get in the book or hit the road, and he did, and that book will convince non-alcoholics that they are alcoholics. And in the meetings, you cannot speak unless you first say, hi, my name is Edward, I'm an alcoholic. Which means that everyone in the room, including those who've never tasted alcohol, including those who only had drinking experience but were not alcoholic, they all identify as an alcoholic. Okay? So the treatment centers cannot allow, if AA were classified as a religion, they wouldn't be able to submit a bill to the insurance company for rendering religious services. It would put a real kink in their operation. Okay? What else? Nothing else, really. Oh, here's one thing they do. You know what they do? They tell me, I went to like 4 groups over the last decade. And every group I go to, someone will come up to me and tell me, hey, bro, if you got drug issues, don't talk about drugs here. Just call it alcoholism while you're here. Okay? I mean, look where you're at. You're in AA, right? You're not in Narcotics Anonymous. You're in AA. Just call it alcoholism here. Well, I saw a young man in that group in California where I went to those 3 meetings a day for 300 days. This was a young male, and he used to speak in the meetings, and he used to say that he liked to have a couple drinks while he's waiting on his crack dealer to deliver the dope to his house. Okay? That was his story that he spoke over and over and over, because that was the truth. He has a couple of drinks, it kind of intoxicates him, but it doesn't satisfy his addiction to crack cocaine. And then someone went to him and told him not to talk about drugs here anymore. So you know what he did? He changed his story from about how he likes to have a couple drinks while he's waiting on his dope to get delivered. He changed his story to this. He said, "Man, I'm an alcoholic. If I even have one drink, I'll go on a binge that might last forever." So their little thing about telling people to pretend that they're alcoholics, they've got this guy telling his idea of what an alcoholic is. I mean, not everybody that has a drinking problem has one or two drinks and goes on a binge that might last forever. But that's his, that's how he perceives alcoholism. And you know what that does? His addiction to crack cocaine, his recovery, his transformation of his life from being a crack cocaine addict, just completely, they just put the brakes on that immediately, because he's walking around pretending to be something that he's not, and he's forbidden to address his issues as a crack cocaine addict. Okay? Now, as long as he continues going to AA, he will achieve abstinence. But he will never, ever be able to address his issues as a crack cocaine addict. And you know what will happen? The first time that he goes out in the world and somebody looks at him and says, "You all right, bro?" They're going to hook him up with a crack pipe, because you know what? He still hasn't come to terms with the fact that crack cocaine destroyed his life. I do hope you guys are having a nice day. My name is Edward.